Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Tonight's guest is Lloyd Auerbach, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number is 888-815-9756, or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. And good evening to you, Bob.
Hello, Fran, and thank you for that wonderful introduction.
Kind of like the same every week.
Oh, okay. As you mentioned, Lloyd Auerbach will be joining us, I guess, around quarter after 20 after the hour. And Lloyd, if you're not familiar with him, does a lot of things. He's a parapsychologist, but he's probably best known for his work in the investigation of the paranormal. So it's always a interesting and fascinating guy to talk to, and I look forward to speaking with him in a few.
I think he's going to be better known soon for his ghost drops.
Yeah, well, that's a surprise. You know. entering into a new venture, which we'll talk about also. You showed me an article that you picked up.
I was just very moved by this. In fact, so much so that I posted it on my personal Facebook page. It's just a wonderful, wonderful story that kind of tells you what's human, what's not human, and how we do rely on spirit and the other side to round things out.
Well, tell us a story.
The story is about a woman, Ashley Owen Hill, who has a keen sense of rescuing animals that are in death's due pounds. And she does a blog called the Lucky Dog Rescue Blog, where you can actually read a lot of her stories and the work that she does. But she most recently adopted a dog named Annie. And Annie had been beaten, neglected, and starved all of her life, and then she was just dumped at a shelter and left to die. And she was lonely. She cried every night. And somehow Ashley was contacted to see if she would take this dog. And
knowing that the dog only had a week or two to live.
Only had a week or two to live. And, in fact, when she spoke with the vet, asked her if she wanted to go ahead and euthanize the dog because it didn't have much longer to live. And she said, and this is a quote, "No, I will bring her back next week. Before she goes to heaven, she needs to know love." And I think it's so touching because that's what the whole story is about. And, you know, that day she brought Annie home and she looked at her and she just cried. She just cried uncontrollably for this dog who had just led a life of abuse and now death and would have never, never, never known love. And Annie set out that day to say the last week of this dog's life, she's going to know nothing but love. And while she was doing this sobbing when she first brought the dog home, the dog actually walked up to her, licked her tears off of her face, as if to say, "Don't be sad, I will be okay." And, you know, and Annie goes on to say, you know, "This precious wounded soul was comforting me, you know."
Right.
Here the tables had been turned. And it just shows you, you know, people say animals don't have souls, and that's wrong. They truly, truly do. And Annie went on, she had the dog sleeping in the bed with her. The dog ate the best food that Annie could. I mean, this dog, for its last week, had a fabulous, fabulous life beyond the love that Annie bestowed upon her. And they also talked about Annie's dog, Annie and Ashley. Is that her name? spoke about another dog that she had had named Rudy. And so she would talk to Annie all about Rudy all the time. And but when Annie got so weak and it was painful for her to live, she took her to the vet to end her suffering. And
well, this you know, this woman in effect is really does hospice work, you know, for animals.
Absolutely.
You know, and the similarities are striking. I mean, there are so many truly dedicated, you know, and loving hospice workers, you know, that don't they do the same thing to people that are fearful and in pain and neglected and maybe, you know, don't have family. And
a lot of times they do have family. Just when the families get to that point at hospice, and this is the worst issue about hospice, is that we've become a society where we leave it to the hospitals and the hospice and the medical profession to do what's right. They more often than not send us out of the room. And so when you get to this hospice situation, when you really should be sharing as much love as you can at the end, a lot of family back off, and that's the wrong thing.
And, you know, it's sad when you look at it, not only with the situation with the dog, but probably with humans too. I mean, if you told somebody that story, a lot of the comments that you hear is like, "Why bother? The dog's going to die in a week, anyways." You know,
or it's just a dog.
Yeah. But then again, also, you know, even with human beings, people have, it's sad to say, they have the same attitude. You know, why, you know, spend so much time? You know, they're going to be gone. You know, in a week. And you know, it's all about, as you mentioned, it's turning fear and hopelessness into love and hope. And who knows what effect that has to somebody when they are rebirthed into this new dimension. Mm. You know, I mean, if it's all about, you know, the emotion of love, and there's a discussion even, you know, in science that, you know, love might very well be some sort of a tangible conduit, then, you know, it's more than just comforting. You know, it's easing and making a transition much, much easier. You know?
Well, I think just that the issue where when Annie went over to her when she was crying about, oh, my God, this poor dog, and Annie went over to her and licked the tears off of her face. I mean, that shows you that even the dog has compassion, and it is all about love and compassion in both directions, humans to animals, animals to humans. I mean, I know people listening who have animals. They know how these animals respond to them.
Yeah, well, it's always that, you know, debate among the general public, you know, that you know, we're different than the animal, many of the animal species, you know, and that we have a consciousness that can reason and so forth. And their logic tells them that, you know, we have souls, you know, and they don't. But, you know, we've read so much about, in channeled reports and people that have had NDEs and so forth that talk about, you know, animals, you know, in these other dimensions. So, you know, then the question is, you know, do you think every animal has a soul? I mean, do you think...
What, you think only some?
Well, I mean, do you think insects have souls?
Why not? Do you think trees have souls? I was thinking of that today as I looked out.
Did you hug any?
The rain. Well, it was raining, so I didn't run out there and hug them, but isn't that the whole concept of hugging a tree, is to be able to feel its soul? And I know that there are people that believe that trees have male and female energies to them, and that when you do hug them, you can tell if the tree is a male or a female tree.
Right. Well, we'll continue some of this. We'll take our break, and when we come back, we'll finish this up, and we'll welcome Lloyd Al back to the show. So stay with us.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.winbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.winbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Lloyd Auerbach. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org.
And we'd like to welcome a new business member, the Academy of Spirituality and Paranormal Studies. And I'd like to tell you that the Academy of Spirituality and Paranormal Studies will be holding their annual conference, Spirituality, Science, and the Paranormal, from June 2nd through June 5th of this year on the campus of Kutztown University in Pennsylvania. The conference will feature inspiring presentations from some of the leaders in the fields of spirituality and non-physical reality and provides attendees with new insights on a variety of spiritual and paranormal topics. Conference details can be found by visiting their informative website, www.aspsi.org, or by calling 860-242-4593. That's 860-242-4593.
And if you're a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. With these hard times upon us, some of our supporters write to say they love the radio show, they want to see it continue, they love the work of Forever Family Foundation, but they just don't have extra dollars these days to send our way. Even though we are a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do. And yet, we want to do so much more. So this is how everyone can help without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out. And each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. But you don't have to stop there. If your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com. But first, use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website. And again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find your items, a portion of what you spend, again, goes back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a moment when you shop to show us that you care. We have some events coming up. Our next event, which we thank Laura Lynn Jackson for, is Filled. That is connecting with your children across the veil on March 25th. But we do have upcoming a weekend retreat, May 20th to 22nd at the Guest House Retreat and Conference Center in Chester, Connecticut. Now, if you think this is far, it's not, because it's near every train, every highway, and every airport, but it's still in a beautiful, bucolic setting. So check it out on the website. It's an afterlife exploration retreat, transforming grief into hope and understanding. It will feature dream visits, induced after-death communication, grief recovery, medium spirit communication, and psychic empowerment. Our presenters are Rita Dwyer, Dr. Mo Teresa Hanna, Kim Russo, and Doreen Malloy. And it's an all-inclusive weekend. You really will enjoy it, and it's worth the trip. We also have our Holiday of the Earth raffle. Win a one-hour phone reading with one of the following certified mediums: Bobby Allison, Laura Lynn Jackson, Lynn LeClaire, Dave Campbell, Kathy Tao. It's $5 a chance. And again, I'm going to remind everybody, there have not been a lot of raffles sold, so your chances of winning are fabulous. And I think that's it with my announcements.
Okay. I think we have a few minutes before Lloyd gets here. But, we were talking a little bit before about animals and whether animals had souls. And so it stands to reason if we do assume, which I believe, as you do, that animals do have souls, then there should be animal ghosts, and that's – or apparitions. Because,
right.
I mean, that's – so – you don't hear about them reported, but you read about them in the literature. You know, a lot of people report feeling, their loved pet that's on the other side doesn't jump
their
on
face
it.
And stuff.
Yeah.
But also, when you're in a group medium presentation with their spirit communication going on, very often you will hear the medium say, a black lab just entered the room.
Right.
And so they see it.
Yeah. And I think also, like when spirit is communicating through a medium, they use the pet as an identifying point, as what do you call it? As evidence that
very evident
that they have the the right person,
right.
There.
And particularly when a medium doesn't know anything about dog or dog breeds, and suddenly comes up with the breed of the dog that the person actually lost.
Yeah, they usually talk about the size of the dog, the color of the dog. Now, sometimes it's a little bit difficult to talk about the personality of the dog, but sometimes the dogs do have a very distinct personality, you know. The dog constantly, you know, bites you in the rear end, and you bring that through, like, you know, that's evidential. So, yeah, but, you know, on that subject, you know, Lloyd will be talking about that, but people... And we could ask Lloyd about it, but, you know, people, I think ghosts have a bad rap, you know. People automatically, it has a connotation of evil, you know, of a scariness.
That's Hollywood.
You know, it's Hollywood and everything else.
I mean, literature.
It's family lore, you know, it's your upbringing, just about everything. People, you just don't think of, you know, ghosts as being, you know, benevolent, you know. But, you know, and then, of course, there are, I mean, a ghost, I think is, you know, the same thing as an apparition. It's just another term. But ghosts are conscious entities. So, I mean, they can interact with you. You know, the questions that a lot of people have, because you hear it very often, they say, well, a ghost is someone who's stuck, you know, they're stuck between two worlds, or they have, you know, an attachment, you know, to the physical, and that's why they hang around. Well, you know, I imagine that sometimes that could be true in some cases, but, you know, sometimes what's the matter with a loved one just wanting to pay a visit, you know? You know, so.
Which is what I just assume they all are all doing. I don't view anybody as being stuck. You know, if they're stuck, they're here by choice. We all have free will. Even spirits have free will.
Yeah. Well, do you think it's possible? I mean, especially if somebody, let's say they've led a very materialistic life, you know, and they had all the toys, and they were so attached to all their material belongings, and then they, you know, they pass over. I could make the case, you know, that they're so that attachment doesn't just disappear, so they sort of stay as close to the physical plane as possible, you know, to maybe live vicariously through the people that are still in the physical.
I don't know, because also what we've heard and read about is that they can create what they want on the other side. So they can create all those materialistic toys.
Yeah, that's true. It doesn't, but maybe there's a learning curve. You know, maybe you can't create all of these, you know, surroundings by your thoughts until you learn how to do it. So maybe initially, that's their only way they can get their kicks, so to speak. You know, until they learn and progress and grow on the other side.
Maybe we should invent a reincarnation meter that tells you how advanced you are before you die, so you know if you should be preparing to create things on the other side or you should get yourself stuck over here.
Yeah, well, all right, you invent that. Well, then, you know, when people, we come across a very, I wouldn't say a tremendous number of people, but quite a number who have told us about seeing their loved ones, you know, in some form. They never refer to it as, you know, I saw a ghost of my loved one. You know, they say, I saw my loved one, you know.
Right. And they don't refer to them as being stuck either. If they were stuck, you'd be able to see them all the time, no?
Yeah. And, well, I think that being stuck thing is harmful to people in grief, because it's another thing that they worry about, you know, is my loved one okay, you know, or are they stuck, you know. So, but.
Well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what's the consensus among the mediums, do you think? I mean, have you discussed that with them?
Not with all of them,
yeah.
With some of them, and you're right. Some believe you get stuck, and some believe you don't get stuck. So what's the truth?
Yeah.
You know, I would err on the side of not getting stuck, because it just seems like another thing to be made up.
Mm. I think it's, you know, there are so many of these shows.
Lloyd is with us.
Okay. You know, and actually, why should we talk about it when we have Lloyd to talk about it? So
and he may have much better answers than we do.
Yeah. Lloyd, are you with us?
I sure am.
Oh, that's good. Well, let me give you a formal introduction. Lloyd Auerbach, Well, all I can say is he wears a great many hats. He's a respected parapsychologist, a professor, an author, lecturer, paranormal investigator, mentalist, magician, psychic entertainer, and I'm here to tell you that he's now a professional chocolatier. Yes, you heard it here first. He holds an MS from JFK University. He was recently appointed to the faculty of Atlantic University, where he's developing an online master's program in parapsychology. He sits on the scientific advisory boards of Forever Family Foundation, the Ryan Research Center, and the Winbridge Institute. He's the director of the Office of Paranormal Investigations, where he's been investigating cases for more than 25 years. He's the author of 7 books, including a paranormal casebook, Ghost Hunting in the New Millennium, and his website is mindreader.com. Well, I guess that's all the time we have for the show. Welcome, Lloyd.
Thanks, and don't forget my new book coming out next month.
Well, tell us about it.
It's called The Ghost Detective's Guide to Haunted San Francisco, and it's actually co-written with a psychic medium by the name of Annette Martin, who I've been working with for a number of years. And it's a different kind of haunted guide in that, in a couple reasons. We only go into 7 places in the whole book, but we take a lot of time in each place. These are places we actually went into, and there are transcripts throughout the book, transcribed parts of our discussion, parapsychologist and medium, and Annette's side of the conversation, at least, with whoever's there.
Okay. Well, then we look forward to that. I guess the people can find out. They'll just have to check mindreader.com, I guess.
Well, actually, it's on Amazon. It's already on Amazon for pre-order, and it's on BarnesandNoble.com for pre-order.
Okay, good. So we'll have to pick up a copy and then invite you back on so we can talk about it.
Sounds good.
I know that, you know, I introduced you as a parapsychologist, and I think it's fair to say that a great many people don't know what the heck a parapsychologist is. I mean, those who do know something about it might say that it's someone who's interested in studying ghosts. So why don't you just let everyone know what's involved in the field of parapsychology?
Sure. Well, parapsychology is a study of, I guess you could almost call it unusual or anomalous, as far as science is concerned, interactions between consciousness and the universe, the world around us. We look at phenomena of the mind, of consciousness, both living and deceased. And so we look at what's called extrasensory perception. We look at mind over matter, psychokinesis, and we look at the idea that consciousness can exist outside the body and without the body, after the death of the body, which kind of puts us squarely into the realm of that would put it into ghosts as well as to reincarnation into other areas, too. So parapsychology itself as a science has focused quite a bit of its energy on laboratory research, mainly, of course, that means ESP and psychokinesis, although of late, as I'm sure your listeners know, there's been more and more research into mediumship as well, and that certainly falls into this as well. Mm. And we are the parapsychology kind of got kick-started officially, not really officially, but with J.B. Ryan back in the 30s. Before that, it was known as psychical research and still is known that way in some parts of the world.
Yeah, and I know in academia, you know, there are many PhDs in psychology, but few and specific enough in parapsychology. Although it seems that more and more courses are now being offered in there. I know that we mentioned you're working now with Atlantic University in developing a course. So do you find that institutions are more open to the field of parapsychology now?
Well, I'd say that not necessarily.
Yeah.
In the UK, there have been probably 20 or so universities that have had courses, or at least individuals who finished up through the University of Edinburgh's psychology program with a specialization in parapsychology. So they've kind of spread the goodwill around that way. And Coventry University last year started an online course over in the UK, and that was a big plus. Atlantic is not a traditional university, and I think that's one reason why they're able to start looking at this as a new program. They are the legacy or connected to the Association for Research and Enlightenment, which is the legacy of Edgar Cayce. So there's that connection as well. And I'm certainly not developing this on my own. In fact, it was Dr. Nancy Zingroni and Carlos Alvarado, who were at Atlantic University, who really pitched this and process this through the university, and myself and Christine Simmons-Moore and the two of them are kind of the core developing some of these courses for a master's program in parapsychology and some certificate programs too. So we're going to have like certificates as well for the folks who don't want to take the full-on graduate program.
Right.
I think the internet itself has made it easier for people to offer courses. I know the Ryan Research Center is now offering a multi-week introduction to parapsychology, kind of an overview. And Carolyn Watt of the University of Edinburgh has offered an online introduction to parapsychology, which has focused quite a bit on laboratory research for the last several years. And then I don't offer my classes via the internet. I certainly publicize them that way. My courses through HCH Institute, which are non-academic, out in California, which are distance learning as well.
Now, some people, you know, with your long career in parapsychology, people may not be aware. I mentioned it that you have another life as Professor Paranormal, and you're a mentalist and a psychic entertainer. So, you know, in looking at that, I would imagine that you found things go both ways. I mean, some scientists would tend to steer clear of you because of they know that you have these abilities, and on the other hand, I would expect that many times you're sought after by many scientists because you could help them improve their protocols and, you know, as they investigate psychic phenomena. So was it a case, did you find both over the years?
Well, first I should say that my interest in magic and mentalism didn't start, I was always a fan growing up, but I didn't start performing like a lot of people when I was a kid. I actually got really involved in magic and then mentalism through a course at John F. Kennedy University in our original graduate program, which was designed by John Palmer, who was running the program at that time, to introduce students to the potential for psychic fraud. We'd have to, because we'd have to assess people sometimes, especially at the laboratory level, and put some controls in. And I just found that I really enjoyed performing and was heavily encouraged by a few of my colleagues, including the late Marcello Truzzi and the late Chuck Honerton, to really, since they knew that I liked to perform, to really push that, to become a performing mentalist, performing magician, which is, there are a number of people in the field who actually know quite a bit about magic, Arthur Hastings being one of them.
Yeah.
But they don't really perform, maybe for their friends, but they haven't performed professionally. And that makes a big difference when you're actually out there in front of audiences of different types, and you can see how people react to what you're doing differently. Mm. So it's really helped me understand the psychology behind what people perceive, which helps me in my investigations and certainly helps me consulting, not just against fraud, but because that hardly ever comes up, honestly, but really more towards tightening up controls and really playing in case, just in case kind of things. I found that my background in magic helps me with many, many skeptics. It's actually helped me with a number of scientists who are not parapsychologists. Then again, there are some who say, well, you ought to know better because I know, how can you believe this stuff? Because you ought to know better. You know that this stuff can be faked. It's like, well,
right.
Doctors give placebos. Those are fakes, too. There's fakes in every field.
Right.
It comes right down to it. There are fake mechanics, we all know,
right.
As we all know. So it helps me there. There's only a couple parapsychologists who have had any problem with me at all being on the magic side, and I think a couple of them were looking askance at me more in the 80s when I was performing in comedy clubs as Crazy Lloyd.
I didn't know that part of that.
Yeah. I used to do a comedy magic act, and I was known as Crazy Lloyd, and I got dubbed that by one of my buddies back in New York. A couple of my buddies, one of them, Mike Piacenti, who's still in he's up in Connecticut now. He's still in the magic world, and he looked at my act and he said, "Man, you got to be crazy, Lloyd, to be running that act." And it stuck.
It stuck.
Yeah.
Crazy Lloyd. We Fran and I were talking a little bit about ghosts and whether it seems like the ghost, when you talk to most people, I don't know how it started, but it has a negative connotation. People are fearful of ghosts.
Well, I think that we're talking folklore that goes back thousands of years.
Yeah.
And it really is the folklore of the ghost story. It's not the folklore of the ghost experience. It's the folklore of telling tales around the campfire to scare the heck out of people. And that's where it comes from.
Yeah. Did When we talk about apparitions, is an apparition just another term for a ghost?
Yeah, I think it sometimes depends on who you're talking to. You know, we use the word apparition since the psychical researchers to represent a discarnate entity, a consciousness that's hanging around and is seen, heard, felt, interacted with in some way. Ghost in some places means something very different. It just really depends on the cultural background of the person, sometimes the religious background of the person. But typically, when I typically use those words interchangeably as opposed to saying something like, you know, a haunt or a haunting, because we're really talking about something more residual there. I do know that some mediums talk about ghosts as people who are discarnate entities who are still here, they haven't moved on, and then they use the term spirit to represent people from the other side. But again, for me and for many of my colleagues, we use those terms all interchangeably.
Yeah. Well, what about that? We were talking about that before you got on as well, about, you know, the concept that all ghosts are stuck, as opposed to, you know, just wanting to pay a visit, you know, that they're somehow just, you know, attached to this physical plane.
I don't know. I feel stuck in my job sometimes.
Yeah.
But I could quit.
Right.
So it's really interesting. If you really look at books about from psychics all over the place, you just look at a spectrum of psychics and mediums, what their definition of a ghost or an earthbound ghost is. Some people, you know, I've actually heard pronouncements like, all ghosts are unaware that they're dead, which is clearly not true, but it is true for some.
Mm-hmm.
All ghosts have unfinished business. That's clearly untrue for all of them. It is true for some of them. I mean, every single rationale that you give is true for some, but not for all, just like living people.
Mm-hmm.
It's
makes
exactly
sense.
The same.
Yeah.
So, there are some people that are stuck here because they don't want to give up their family. There are some people who are stuck here because they're afraid to move on. There are some people who are stuck here because they think they can't leave their house because that's what they saw in the movies.
Right. Well, I would agree. I mean, then we get into the area of the ghosts have intelligence. You know, are they just images, or can they interact? And you know, I mean, if we believe in survival of consciousness, and you know, ghosts mm-hmm. are conscious entities, so therefore they should have intelligence.
They should be conscious. I don't know if they have intelligence, because I know a lot of people who aren't terribly intelligent.
Right.
Alive.
You do?
Yeah, unfortunately.
You mentioned before, briefly, you mentioned haunting. Now, mm-hmm. you know, to most lay people, you know, when they hear haunting, they think of a discarnate entity, you know, a spirit that has, you know, evil intentions and some diabolical but in the parapsychology world, you would define a haunting quite differently. So
A haunting typically is what some people call a residual haunting. It is it's location specific or sometimes object specific, where a bit of history of that location or object has been somehow imprinted or, you know, recorded into the environment, and can look like a person. It's kind of like a hologram that the living witnesses pick up on and play back in their mind in relation to what's going on. So I think one of the best examples of a difference between a haunt and a ghost or a haunt and an apparition is the old question, is it live or is it Memorex?
Right.
When you're hearing a voice from the other room singing, it could be a living person singing, or it could be that it's actually a recording of a living person singing. And you don't really know that until you investigate the situation, unless there are other cues that help you explain that.
Yeah. Well, even after the investigation, you may not come to a determination, right?
That's correct. That's correct. Yeah, so we have to kind of look at signs of interactivity. And unfortunately, I kind of kiddingly say that I've met people that you look in their eyes and you can't even tell that, you can't really tell that anybody's home, but at least you know that they are there because you can touch them. There are impressions of or recordings of people doing, it's actually the living that leave hauntings behind, it's not the dead. We have many cases on record, I've had many investigations where what people experienced was related to an event that happened with living people, people who are still living, who left behind that impression. When I was really young, I always kind of wondered when I started reading some of the books on ghosts and hauntings and such, that it made no sense that people reported that the dead mate left these impressions behind when you'd have a case, for example, of a murder being committed. and people would move into the house, and they'd see the murder being committed. And then it comes to find out that there was a murder really there, and they were kind of witnessing a replay of that event. But here's the problem. The murderer was still alive at the time that people were seeing the image.
Hmm.
So if he was still alive, it couldn't have been his ghost that was leaving, was part of the impression. He wasn't trapped there. This is an impression, a recording in the environment of the event, not so much the ghost, certainly not even, the, you know, of anything post-mortem. And there are recordings of people doing activity that have nothing to do with death. The people are still alive. It's emotional impact. It's a lot of other things, and it really doesn't have too much to do with the spirit world in that sense. But the mechanism by which people, living people, pick this up may be the same by which people pick up other psychic things.
Well, that makes
very
interesting. Yeah. So, and when we talk about these, you know, memories or images or holograms, you know, that are stored in the environment could be something that we would consider to be like physical, like walls and concrete.
Right.
Yeah,
which actually raises the issue that what we experience with hauntings may, in fact, not involve psychic ability at all. There may be some environmental component interacting with the brain, and this is something that it's one angle to that really needs research, because this may not be the same as psychically picking up information.
Yeah.
It may come through as the same, just like when you see something visually, you're not really seeing it potentially with your eyes if it's a psychic event, but it still comes through your perceptions that way.
Yeah. When we, most researchers, when they talk about poltergeist and poltergeist activity, they attribute it to psychokinesis, you know, caused by the heavy emotions or strong emotions, usually of a resident of the site. Have you ever, on an investigation, experienced like things flying around the room or movement that you attributed to PK?
Yes, and two different types of that. And I think it's really important to be real clear that when a ghost moves something, when an apparition moves something, that is still PK. Because I have had apparitional cases where several where there were physical object movements that were totally attributable to the apparition, and I've had a number of cases where there was no apparition seen, experienced in any way, shape, or form, no indication of a discarnate presence, and the psychokinetic activity was coming from somebody alive in the house.
Hmm.
So you can, again, have, it's the same ability, it's just one's being used by the unconscious mind of the living versus, we assume, a conscious mind of the dead, of a discarnate entity. So it's kind of hard, it can be tough.
Yeah, it makes sense because, I mean, mediumship is really telepathy, you know, it just, you know,
right.
doesn't have a body, you know. So
it's mind-to-mind communication. Just because the guy doesn't have you know, a head or a brain doesn't mean that you're not still picking up his thoughts.
Yeah. Do you think, Lloyd, that, you know, as you go on these investigations, do you think that some people, in this case some investigators, seem more prone to get spirit communication than others? Is it some sort of an attraction, some sort of resonance, or is it open-mindedness? Or, you know, do you find that you or some of your colleagues pick up more stuff than others?
I think that there's definitely something to all of what you say. There are, I mean, when I've gone on cases, especially cases where we've gone to places multiple times, and especially even with TV, I know how to approach the case so that there's a better chance that things will actually happen, that we'll get cooperation. And I do work with mediums, and we'll typically get interaction as well. And part of that, to me, is approaching not only just with an open mind, but with a light heart. I think it's really important to remember that if we do have people sticking around after death, they should be respected and treated like people. And unlike the TV shows where, you know, ghost hunters will go in and start yelling at people, you know, if somebody walked into my house and started yelling at me, and I was an invisible man, I'd either whack him on the side of the head and run, or I'd just leave.
Right.
And it's really not a surprise that they don't get a whole lot. There are people who seem to be attracting the phenomena, just perhaps because unconsciously or consciously they're psychic. And that just seems to attract that. And I've kind of contended for the last several years that I find it really fascinating with so many people doing EVP, the electronic voice phenomena stuff, that certain people get EVP regularly, some of it really good, and then many people with them never get anything.
Yeah, that would be me.
Yeah, I think that those people who get it all the time are mediums without realizing. They are working as a part of the circuit between the apparitions present and the device. And I've used, I kind of coined the term as a takeoff of a term from the old TV show Babylon 5.